Accession number 20473, Reel 7.
Done, Reel 7.
We used this beach to play football on when we were in that area, and we'd never seen any enemy activity there. But this rocket ship come up and didn't do any more than go into this area where the beach was and put about 2,000 rockets in there in about 10 minutes. Potholed the old beach. All it did was put them off football ground out of action. It was typical Americans. I don't know where they get the orders from or even where they get the ideas from, who tells them what's what, but they seem to do most peculiar things. But we got with Americans when we were in Sasebo. It was an American base. And we did have a NAFI, and we got the NAFI going, and at the end, I think they tried to shut it down at the end because we were getting stripped going and what have you.
Getting what?
Strips. Women stripping, you know. And the Americans never had that kind of facility. And at the end of the day, it got a bit too popular with the army, and the Yanks particularly used to come in.
You mean strippers?
Yeah, strippers, yeah. We used to get strippers in there. The powder didn't like it either. But started off, it was, if you know anything about the Navy, you'll find that people from Devonport, people from the West Country, they're very quiet, usually, even in the Navy. And you go to a place where a canteen had been used by Devonport ratings, and there were a couple of tea merchants, you know, as we call them. They never do much in the way of drink or anything. It would be quiet. Of course, the ship ahead of us was that kind of ship. So when we went into Sasebo, got a shore leave on the first afternoon, went into the NAFI, oh, it was dead. Nothing was happening. And we banged on the counter, and the shutters were all down, and this Japanese chap come out and said, oh, we don't open the afternoon. Said, why not? You do know, we're on leave. Anyway, finally found the canteen manager and made him open the place. And things, he said, well, nobody ever comes here in the afternoon. He said, we never get hardly anybody in the evening, mind afternoon. But things altered when we got in there. They could get a cheap pint for a start, so, you know, that's it. You see, with it being an American base, we were only allowed about $2 pocket to ashore. We were only allowed to change up to about $2 when we went ashore, and it didn't go anywhere. So by spending our money in the NAFI, we could get a decent drink, you know, a fair price.
You were telling me about these warrants that people got.
Warrants, yeah.
For what type of things were they, what type of misdemeanors were they getting the warrant?
Well, quite a lot of different it's very often direct refusing orders and things like that, mainly, and sometimes fights ashore. And anything above normal commander is usually given as a warrant. Well, you can get a court-martial from a warrant, but generally speaking, it means that the punishment you can get can be more than what you would normally get from a commanding officer, like a warrant. While we were out in Japan, for instance, we had two blokes beat up a Japanese taxi driver. Mind you, the Japanese arrested him. You might have heard it. Well, back home, they knew about this, heard about this, they put him in jail. And we found out that the Americans had an agreement with the Japanese. Any of their people done any wrong, they looked after it, they sorted it out. They wouldn't give us the same idea. The Yanks didn't want to know about us, so the Japanese police could actually arrest us and try us, you know, could try in their courts. We tried our best to get these two out of jail. We even followed them around and sent people in to try and get them out of jail. But it serves them right for what they got. I forget what they got, 18 months or something like that. But it seems they'd beaten up this taxi driver and taken his money. But there was all sorts. When you get this disgruntled attitude on a ship, it soon leads to problems where people refuse to do something they don't like, and then somebody else steps in, and before you know, they're either getting a petty officer or a chief or something like that, and them are the kind of things you get warrants for, really.
Where did the seamen get these strippers from?
Oh, the Japanese. They had some quite good bands and that going, yeah. I don't know who used to organise, but somebody did. I think possibly the Nuffy manager come into it as well. I mean, from his point of view, it was great. He was getting customers. We had one woman used to come in there. We used to call her Rose. She used to sing, and then she'd gradually strip, you see. And she always had a rose at the end, and she used to throw it into the audience, you see. And very often, but when she got to our last piece of garment, the lights used to go out, you see, and she used to disappear. And this night, we'd had a lot of army blokes had come in, and they were standing at the back. And she was very provocative, this girl. And they were pushing closer and closer all the time. And here we got the Japanese band, probably about 8 or 9 players, you know. And as they got closer and closer, then when she threw the rose, they all charged forward to get it. And of course, the band got trampled on and what have you. But no, we had some fun and games out there.
Was she Japanese?
Oh, yeah, woman, oh, yeah. Japanese girls are very nice, believe you me. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, looking at coloured girls of any sort, they're the best of the lot, no doubt about it. Better than the Chinese and everybody else. I mean, they didn't have the restrictions. The Chinese girls are invariably flat-chested for a start, and not so much now, but they used to be then, because they used to bind themselves, you know. But the Japanese girls were very nice of it. Yeah, and they were very accommodating as well.
When you were in Belfast, did you sleep in bunks or hammocks?
Hammocks. There were no bunks then.
Can you tell me about sleeping in hammocks in
Great
Belfast?
Great place. Best thing to sleep in. Particularly on a ship. As the ship goes round the hammock, you know, the hammock stays still and the ship goes round it when you're in a rough sea. You don't fall out of a hammock, not unless you don't put it upright. I slept in a hammock after leaving boys' training. And except for when I was under the army conditions and barracks, I slept in the hammock, all slept in the hammock at sea. And you only had 14 inches, you know, between hammocks. That's all the room you had.
But didn't the sailors bother each other with being so close?
No, you tend to touch someone next door, but it didn't bother, you know. You used to swing. When a ship swing, they all swing together anyway, so... No. That was the standard, say, 14 inches.
But what if your neighbour had some repulsive habit, like snoring?
Well, yeah, you'd take him away and scrub him, wouldn't you? The Navy had done their own thing. They looked after their own people, make no mistake about it. You couldn't be dirty in the Navy for very long before the rest of the lads had you down the bathroom with an hard scrubber on you. Not arguing about that. Even with people with sweaty feet and that, they used to find ways and means of sorting them out.
What ways? What ways?
Well, you know, they made sure that he had clean socks on every day and everything that goes with it, you know, and give him different powders to put on. But No, when you live in a close community like that, you've got to be like that. No doubt about it.
What about snoring?
It's one of these you had to put up with, although they'd probably go there and hold their nose or something, the gag. But generally speaking, people snore because they lay on the back rather than any other reason, so... Bang on the hammock until it turned over and stopped, that's all.
Where exactly did you sling your hammock in Belfast?
Well, on the mess deck.
Where was that?
Oh, I keep trying to think of where it was now. I was 4 top division. Was I? No, was it? I was forecastle division. So wherever the forecastle mess deck was, I mean, I've been on the Belfast system, I just sort of recognise the place, I've altered it so much. The mess decks have gone, as it were. You've got communal feeding on there now. They didn't when I was on there. You ate on your own mess.
Can you tell me about feeding in Belfast in your day?
Yeah. The Belfast, actually, was the same as almost any other ship in the Navy, what are called general messing. And your mess consisted of a table which had seats either side, long forms with a form on the top, you know, leatherette. And they were about, I would say, 3 foot across. And you usually had your lockers for your clothes and that adjacent. And then you had the bars above there, which your bars for slinging your hammocks. There was never enough for everybody on the mess deck. So some people used to sleep on the floor, some people slept on the table and sleep on the stools and that. The general messing But that wasn't bad at all, really. The only thing you had to do, you had to peel your own potatoes. But you had cooks used to cook your meals. And all you had to do was collect them and serve them out and dish up all your bits and pieces, like, you know, your culinary stuff. You got issued with tea, sugar and things like that, make your own tea and all that kind of thing. That's general messing. Canteen messing, you've got to do the lot. You've got to prepare it and very often cook it in the galley. Or if you've got cooks there, all they do is watch it, make sure it doesn't burn. But you've got to do all the preparations on canteen messing. And you buy what you want. There's certain free issues of vegetables, that's to keep people healthy, I think. And there's a meat issue. Other than that, you buy the rest yourself and decide what you're going to have to eat and everything else. I was only on that when I was reserve fleet, usually.
Which did you prefer, canteen or general?
Canteen messing's all right if you've got a number of people on the mess who can cook. You know, preferred food, make Yorkshire puddings and things like that. If you haven't got them, well, of course, you're going to have a very bad time. And the Navy don't teach you how to do that. You've got to find out yourself. If you're a cook, of course, yes, but not if you're an ordinary man. And when I was reserve fleet on the Didom, I was on the Didom, but it was, I forget the name of the fleet. Anyway, I was running a 42-foot launch, running up and down the Medway in the bottom of the Thames. And I was 24 hours about. And I used to go every night, every hour overnight, I used to have to go up to the minesweepers. They used to have they put them into wraps after the war, and they used to have working parties on that, keep them up to scratch, and they used to have a lamp, oil lamp, on each one of them, and I used to have to go up every hour the boat and make sure they were lit. If they weren't, get a lamp trimmer to get them lit. It used to be a full-time job for 24 hours on the boat. I was also in charge of a mess, which was a transit mess. In other words, I never knew how many people were going to come for lunch, and fiddle them, make sure they had the food. And this was after the war, and you had national servicemen amongst that lot, and they hadn't got a clue. It'd be quite a job. And I'd come off the boat, and I'd say to my crew, all right, clean the boat up, go in there, get half a stone of flour, make out a load of covers for pies. Because depending on what the meat was like, whether you could have it as steaks, whether you could have it as a joint, or whether you just had it as pie meat. So we also had what we call clackers. These were pastry tops, what you made. And you made different sizes according to what size you were going to use. And we used to roll them up in greaseboard paper and put them in the drawers. And it's amazing what you can do when you want to.
Could you cook?
Yeah, I still do. Well, I learned the hard way, so I had to.
Did you get any pests or infestations and shit?
The only ones I come across bugs, and funny enough, that was on the Uralis, and that was out in the Middle East. And I do believe they come from Malta. Malta was proper bug-ridden. If you went ashore in Malta overnight, you'd be lucky if your face was still the same next morning. There'd be lumps everywhere. The bugs used to bite hell at you. Well, some of the people come off the ship and probably off the shore and probably brought them with them, and they got into the seats underneath the leatherette. So we had to be strip all the seats down and be fumigated, the old mess deck. It's the only time I ever come across it. But you did get our old friend when you were in the Far East.
Cockroaches?
That's it. Well, they were rife. Not much you could do about them, really. In fact, in the galley, they used to drop off the bulkheads onto the frying pan while they're frying the eggs and all that kind of thing.
Was this in Belfast?
Well, any ship goes in the Far East, it goes abroad. It's all the ships are the same. Of course, you get rats on a ship as well, naturally. Not all that many, but you get them. Every ship's got rats. They come on from the dockyards, you see. They come up the brows or climb up the wires, and you have rats on all the ships got rats, but they don't normally bother you. Now, the only time I had a thing with a rat was I was on the Uralis. I was laid there in my hammock, nothing on because it was pretty warm. It was out in the Mediterranean, and I'm reading my book. And the lads had cornered a rat. Well, it was, you know, on board a ship you have these channels run along with wires on for lights and all that kind of thing. And of course, it's all metal. And this rat, they got it in the section, and it couldn't get out. As they were chasing it around with newspapers trying to hit it, and this rat was running around, and I'm reading. Next minute, it's on my chest, isn't it? It fell off, and I was out the hammer quicker than the rat, I'll tell you that. But we did have people who was attacked by them. Mainly, what they'd do, they'd climb down onto the hammock rail, and then walk down the nettles, you know, the hammock strings, they call them nettles, and they might get caught in somebody's hair. It's dark. Or they've even been known to chew people's feet if they were there. But the naval ships are pretty clean, believe you me. They're more likely to get that kind of thing on merchant ships than you would on naval ships.
Any problems with diseases through living in ships, like TB or anything?
No, I never noticed that. The only thing we had on board on the Uranus in the Mediterranean, once again at Malta, they had a polio epidemic in Malta during the war, long before they had it over here. Mind, it wasn't called polio then, it was called infantile paralysis, of course. And nobody knew exactly what it was. I think they thought it was some kind of rickets. And we had about three or four people come down with it, but because they had a lot ashore. I suppose they must have caught it ashore. And all we done was isolate it on the upper deck. Finally, until we got to a place where there was a good hospital and got rid of them.
Did you ever get the food infested by insects?
No.
Like weevils or anything?
No. They're used to in the old days, of course, naturally. But no. The food in the Navy was probably far better than the RAF or the Army got. Don't ask me why. We always had the best of food. I think partly because a lot of our food come from overseas. You see, we had that kind of privilege. But even in the UK, I used to marvel during the war at the beautiful stuff they used to bring aboard. Sides of pork and beef and all that kind of thing. And I'm pretty sure the Navy had the choice food. I'm sure they did.
What were relations like with petty officers and commissioned officers?
Well, good, really. I told you earlier on that Navy relies more on self-discipline than people pushing you around. In fact, seamen or sailors don't like being pushed around. And usually they're not, because they get on with the jobs, usually. Well, you do get one or two awkward ones, obviously, but generally speaking, he had quite a good relationship. And, I mean, we'd call petty officers and chiefs, we'd call them chief, we never call them sir, anything like that. And, in a way, I suppose, a certain amount of disrespect, but it never bothered anybody.
What would you call a petty officer?
P.O., usually. Or something you can call him by his first name if you felt like it. But generally speaking, you call him P.O., you know, sir. You never call him sir, and chief is called chief and all that lot. But although they live separate, by the way, the hardest job in the Navy is a leading seaman.
Why?
Well, of course, he's got to live with the people and take charge of them as well. And I was a leading seaman for a long time. It is very hard work, because anything that happens on the mess decks, the petty officers and chiefs don't get the blame. The leading seaman takes a rap every time. I could be on a weekend's leave, and my mess didn't scrub out on a Saturday morning for rounds properly, and when I got back, I'm on a charge, despite the fact I wasn't even there. That was very much like how the Navy was. So, it meant that the people, you had to get respect, but at the same time, you couldn't be too easy on the mess decks. And of course, anybody come off drunk and start causing trouble, you were the first in line, you had to stop it. Otherwise, later on, of course, you'd probably have, you might have the Master Times and the, see, that policeman on the ship's the Master Times and the regulating petty officer. But generally speaking, it was usually sorted out on the mess deck.
So why didn't you say, well, I refuse to be leading seaman?
Why did I?
Could you have said that?
Well, I did, didn't I, for some time. I'll give you a period jump. My life would have been carried on being a misery because of that. I had a pretty good record, that was why. If you want to see it, I'll show you it. I had a very good record, superior and whatever, all the way through. But I didn't particularly... I joined the Navy as a boy, I agree, but I wanted to fly aircraft, funny enough. And it seems a bit odd, but I started getting the fleet air arm. And that was the main reason I carried on as an advanced class boy, and that to go through all this educational situation. so I could be in a position where I could be transferred later on when I was 18 into the Fleet Air Arm. Now, you know a bit about the history of the war. Well, you must know that when the war started, we had quite a number of fleet carriers. But it wasn't very long when we didn't have hardly any of them that were seaworthy. They either sunk or they were damaged. Now, there was talk at that time, that'd be what, 41 time, early 42, 41. There was talk at that time that they might do away with the Fleet Air Arm. It wasn't until the task forces started, where they used the merchant ships and put the decks on, and the Yanks used them to a very good, that we started to build up again. So by the time the Pacific Fleet went out there, there was thousands of people in the Fleet Air Arm, but there wasn't 3 years beforehand. And that was the reason why I couldn't transfer at the time. And of course my skipper, although he was a very nice bloke, he didn't like losing his ACAC people, because that's another thing people don't understand, is that there was no such thing as an air rating before the war. They never thought about aircraft attacking ships. They said it was practically impossible for a ship to be sunk by aircraft. So consequently, it was very much neglected. Now, all you had then for guns, was, as far as that was concerned, mainly in the close range area, you used to have 0.5 machine guns, which were pretty useless against aircraft anyway. You know, the shells just go straight through them out the other side. Didn't have cannon shell. And pom-pom was the nearest thing you had. That went back during the 30s. But generally speaking, these guns were then manned by ordinary gunnery rates, like layer rates and people like that. It never came to a specialised rate until just after the war started, and I realised it was necessary to have people who could eye shoot, in other words, allow the aim off and all that went with it, and when they brought in air rates. And I was at air rate and right from square one. I never liked being down below when there was action on. I liked to be up top, see what was going on. I mean, but that was the best job to be in, was to be at air, because you're always out in the open.
What was the attitude towards the Master at Arms?
Well, they weren't too happy with him. Generally speaking, the jaunty. Well, yeah, but I mean, basically, a lot depended on the person himself. He was a necessary evil, let's put it that way. But there's something else about, maybe you don't know, or you haven't come across. The Navy always done their own patrols. They didn't have MPs and red caps and things like that. Not originally. So what used to happen, if a ship went into a port, you might be duty part of the watch, and you get detailed up to go on patrol. You know, to look at, keep people in line who's ashore. Which meant this, that one night you would be ashore having a good drink and causing a bit of trouble, or you know, being noisy. Next night you might be on patrol. So what used to happen was this: when the lads were in a place, a patrol would go ashore, the patrol used to try and keep away from the lads, and the lads used to keep away from the patrol wherever for obvious reasons. And I tell you what used to work, you had less trouble like that. You never had people attacking a patrol or anything like that, because they'd be doing it themselves next day. Unlike what you had with the MPs and people like that, who used to sometimes get attacked. And you never. I've done a lot of patrols with the Yanks, particularly in Hong Kong and Southport and places like that, Glasgow, and been mixed up with the Yanks, where the Yanks have been around there. And oh dear me, they'll hit anybody in the head, and you only got to look at them sideways. And we never had that kind of situation, and we were a bit more civilised than that, and we had less trouble than most people, I think.
When a ship was in port in England, what kind of relaxations would sailors have in places like Portsmouth and Devonport?
Well, Matlows are well known for going ashore and probably going to the first two or three boozers and working their way towards the town. But generally speaking, in a place like Plymouth, for instance, Union Street was where most of Matlows got, where the women got, and the various pubs there were dives, like, you know. Chatham, there wasn't any particular area that was bad. Most of the areas were pretty bad anyway, when you think about it. Chatham wasn't particularly liked by the Navy or the lads. The Kentish people had a funny attitude towards them. At least I found that. But
what kind of attitude?
Well, a bit of a superior attitude. And yet, funny enough, Chatham wouldn't have been on the map if it hadn't been for the Navy. That's what used to amuse me no end. It was the first naval dockyard, was Chatham. But they did have this attitude. In fact, they have an attitude with each other, whether you're a man of Kent or a Kentish man. There's no doubt about it. That comes out very much so, particularly when the lads are down there, particularly during the war. They weren't, I wouldn't say they weren't very social towards us at all. And yet, they wouldn't have had a town unless it'd been the Navy, because practically everybody worked in the dockyard.
What's the difference between a Kentish man or a man of Kent?
Well, one's moved in or lived there a long time, the other one's born there. It's as simple as that. Antecedents, sir.
And Portsmouth?
I didn't spend a lot of time in Portsmouth, hardly any time, tell you the truth. I've been to Portsmouth since the war, more than I've been before. I understand, though, that from people who were in Portsmouth, that the people were pretty friendly there. I think, basically, because of the tradition. Nelson and what have you. I think the tradition had a lot to do with people getting on quite well in Portsmouth, but around the Hard you've got all these little pubs and things like that, like you've seen at the George and Lady Hamilton and all that. I was never involved in them, I suppose.
Can you explain what a pierhead jump is exactly?
Well, a pierhead jump is when you're pushed onto a draft without the normal going through the normal routine. You go in there with a bad record, that's all. Being forced onto it because you did something they don't like. Or, in my case, it was because I wouldn't go through for leading seamen's seat. And that's it. But that's all it boils down to. See, normally in the Navy, when you get drafted, you're told in advance you're going somewhere. Then you go through a routine and stuff in your. Or loaned on the ship, or doing a medical and eyesight, you name it. So that when you go to your next place, they've got a full record of you, and they know you're not carrying, as you might have said, disease or anything like that. Well, that pierhead jump, they don't mind. All I've done was stamped everything up. I was 11 o'clock, I was told I was going on there. They even packed my kit for me. Detailed somebody while I was down there, packed my kit. So when I went up my room in the barracks, the kit was already thrown into the kit bag. It was go down there and get aboard the ship. And as soon as I walked on it, I was put straight on watch, quartermaster.
Why did you not like this officer, Lefanu?
Who?
Lefanu.
Oh, Lefanu.
Lefanu.
It wasn't only me that didn't like it. I don't think anybody liked him. No, he was a bit of a sod. I can't show you somewhere around here. I've got one of the daily orders. He was a man who, I don't think he trusted anybody else in that respect. He even used to write the daily orders himself, which normally speaking, you've got a commander's office and you've got, you know, a couple of writers in there or seamen doing that job, and they do it. No, he used to do it himself. And he used to crack a load of jokes which nobody really liked. He was very sarcastic as well. He if anything happened, he used to write sarcastic remarks about it in the daily order. He was a peculiar character, was Lefanu. And he was disliked. He was very strict. Now, another thing, you see, in the Navy, you have rounds every Saturday, yeah, so the captain's rounds. You have rounds every evening. We go around and make sure the mess decks are tidy, everybody's in what they call the evening rig, and what have you. But usually the officer of the watch does that. On a superb, but 9 times out of 10, it was Lefanu that went round. He just had to get too much involved, you know, and so... I just didn't like him, I thought.